Chapter 7. Society.
Alternative.
Alternative.
In an MTV Unplugged appearance, Kurt Cobain of the alternative band Nirvana performs a song called Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam.
Many alternative therapies assume that mind and body are subtly interlocked and influence each other powerfully.
Amnesty International.
Amnesty International.
In a 1992 report on the indigenous peoples of the Americas, Amnesty International cited dozens of human rights violations carried out by Mexican authorities against the Maya people of Chiapas. Baby boomers.
Baby boomers.
Much to the annoyance of baby boomers, their kids often prefer rapping to singing and consider rhythm and riffs more important than melody.
The nation, with its glut of middle-aged baby boomers, is getting older.
Black Panthers.
Black Panthers.
She tells an absorbing story of real struggle, how she became the leader of the Black Panther Party, how she and the party battled racism, and how she fought sexism within the group.
His bizarre resurrection of an old story about how the North Vietnamese and the Black Panthers had conspired to kill him back in the 70s also disrupted his campaign, even as it caused people to wonder about his stability.
Bohemian.
Bohemian.
As for Iowa, more than 20 years ago, the state Supreme Court raised eyebrows nationwide when it ruled that a church-going set of grandparents would provide a better life for a young child than the child's father, who was living as a bohemian in California.
There were individualistic and bohemian groups of all stripes, hippies, anarchists, human rights groups, lesbians, gays.
Boutique.
Boutique. Cunning Hollywood script doctors had to approach the European originals not as finished portraits, but as sketches in need of coherence, heart, pizzazz. It's what rewriters do, refashion a boutique item so it will jump off the shelves at the mall.
Brain drain.
Brain drain. One reason for the laggard pace was Britain's Passenger Act of 1803, which raised the cost of transatlantic tickets and served to discourage a brain drain of talented workers who might carry with them England's industrial secrets.
Cajuns.
Cajuns.
Amateur cooks have joined the craze with the help of more than 20 cookbooks devoted exclusively to hot and spicy Mexican, Thai, and Cajun foods.
Following a 20-minute civil ceremony, the couple, accompanied by a brass band, led their wedding party to a Creole turkey dinner at the city's landmark restaurant, Arnaud's.
Challenged.
Challenged. And besides, no Bushy really had the stomach to attack Dole for telling the truth, which is that the nation's educationally challenged vice president was a bit wide of the mark when he charged that Ross as boss would destroy the Constitution.
Come out of the closet.
Come out of the closet. Frank said he has had a faithful male relationship since coming out of the closet, and he will seek re-election in 1990.
Consciousness raising.
Consciousness raising.
Throughout the 1970s, the movement was more consciousness-raising in the classic sense. People were enunciating new issues. There were speak-outs and demonstrations. That still goes on, but now that we have majority support, we're ready for institutional change.
University officials, and many students as well, are fighting to reverse the trend by cracking down on bigots and joining in consciousness-raising efforts.
Dependency culture.
Dependency culture.
Welfare's flaws are under scrutiny. For a fraction of recipients, the checks create a culture of dependency in which children grow up without ever seeing members of their family go to work.
A Democrat uttering such sentiments would have been drummed out of the party a few years ago. But the deepening culture of dependency has made an emphasis on personal responsibility palatable even to liberals.
Disadvantaged.
Disadvantaged. In a study published last June, Bard College economist Dimitri Papadimitriou concluded that new laws were needed to head off a bitter struggle between these new immigrants and disadvantaged segments of the U.S. population for increasingly scarce, low-skill, low-wage jobs.
Literati.
Literati.
Woody and Mia. No last names, please, for the king and queen of Manhattan's glitterati.
Long before the literati invented magic realism, the people who worked in movie studios were living it.
Harbinger.
Harbinger.
Signals is a good example of why White Oak's eclectic programming works, and may be a harbinger of dance's future.
The legal actions herald a major new offensive by America's anti-smoking forces.
The 90s has also ushered in some drug novelties. Hobo.
Hobo. Ironweed, the grim and shadowed second novel of the series, retreats a few years and fleshes out Billy's father Francis, once a Major League Baseball player, later a hobo who exiled himself because while drunk, he accidentally dropped and killed an infant son.
Hooligan.
Hooligan. In a hail of rocks and Molotov cocktails, skinheads and neo-Nazis in the eastern German port of Rostock tried to storm an apartment block housing 200 asylum-seeking Romanian gypsies, beginning an ugly battle that would last all week. After officials moved the gypsies, the hooligans trapped 100 Vietnamese guest workers in a neighboring building and set it ablaze.
Jet set.
Jet set.
At the dinner hour one evening, Magila Coz, co-owner of Miami's chic Brasserie de Coz, was recounting tales of European friends who are investing in Miami, including a jet-set residential club on South Beach.
The unseemly image of charity officials living high on the hog threatened to dampen future donations and tarnish the squeaky clean image of the nation's premier non-religious charity.
Knockoff.
Knockoff.
Shows like America's Most Wanted and Reporters have resorted to tabloid sensationalism, while Totally Hidden Video is a techie knockoff of Candid Camera. Fox's hit high school show Beverly Hills 90210 begot a doleful dornful of knockoff, all vying for the young audience.
Ku Klux Klan.
Ku Klux Klan.
Southern blacks, hounded by poverty and a rampaging Ku Klux Klan, were moving to the north in large numbers.
So there, in the middle of Rockport Park, stood a massive burlap-wrapped, kerosene-soaked cross, surrounded by Klansmen, and even a few Klanswomen, their robes billowing in the soft breeze.
The Movement.
The Movement.
Martin Luther King Jr., not Kennedy, was the moral leader of the civil rights movements, rights confirmed only in Lyndon Johnson's tenure.
Many of the first black mayors, like Stokes and Hatcher, were charismatic veterans of the civil rights movement who became national spokesmen for the plight of the inner cities.
Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law. In December, astronauts are scheduled to ride the shuttle into orbit to repair the star-crossed Hubble Space Telescope. Should the unprecedentedly complex mission go exactly as planned, NASA could regain some credibility. But if history is any guide, it probably won't. Space is a harsh and unforgiving place, where Murphy's Law is paramount.
Punk.
Punk.
Meshing the angry nihilism of punk and heavy metal with the synthetic sheen of techno, The Downward Spiral is a 14-song, 65-minute howl of somebody falling into the void.
I was taking it all out on these innocent people, he concluded. I would call them bitch, whore, and punk, just like I was called. It made me feel powerful.
Shantytown.
Shantytown.
The happy ending is cold comfort. A ruck of bony children trying to sleep in a shantytown.
There, the visitors found a second city of cardboard condos, clogged with the traffic of shopping carts through makeshift living rooms, outfitted with easy chairs and dresser drawers.
Social Security.
Social Security.
The government issued revised estimates on the solvency of Social Security and Medicare. Both remain in trouble. The Social Security Old Age and Disability Trust Funds are expected to run out of money in 2029. The Medicare Hospital Trust Fund in 2001.
Guaranteed benefit programs currently eat up 49% of the federal budget, a whopping $738 billion. The largest chunk is Social Security, $319 billion. But entitlements also include Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, government pensions, unemployment insurance, and farm subsidies.
Teetotaler.
Teetotaler.
A teetotaler with a consuming passion for food in all its varieties. He is a well-known workaholic. He supposedly sails for relaxation, but he sails alone.
Off the job or on, a political boozer is apt to be a loser. That's not to say teetotaling assures success.
Telecommuting.
Telecommuting. Companies must adopt flexible work schedules and telecommuting, taking advantage of the electronic revolution so that a bank's backroom operations, for example, can be located far from its headquarters.
Yuppie.
Yuppie.
After all, the problems of these Harvard women could simply be the yuppie baby boomer hubris that says this generation of upscale Americans is going to make easy what their parents found hard.
The Rocky Mountain home of cowboys and lumberjacks has become a magnet for Lone Eagle telecommuters and Range Rover driving yuppies.
Welfare, a white secret.
Time, December 16th, 1991. Page 84, by Barbara Ehrenreich.
Come on, my fellow white folks, we have something to confess. No, nothing to do with age spots or those indoor tanning creams we use to get us through the winter without looking like the final stages of TB. Nor am I talking about the fact that we all go home and practice funky dance moves behind drawn shades. Out with it, friends. The biggest secret known to whites since the invention of powdered rouge: welfare is a white program. Yep, and it's no more black than Vanilla Ice is a fair rendition of classic urban rap.
The numbers go like this. 61% of the population receiving welfare, listed as means-tested cash assistance by the Census Bureau, is identified as white, while only 33% is identified as black. These numbers notwithstanding, the Republican version of political correctness has given us welfare cheat as a new term for African American since the early days of Ronald Reagan. Yet if the Lakers were 61% white and on a winning streak, would we be calling them a black team?
Wait a minute, I can hear my neighbors say. We're not as slow at math as the Asian Americans like to think. There's still a glaring disproportion there. African Americans are only 12% of the population as a whole, at least according to the census count, yet they're 33% of the welfare population, surely evidence of a shocking addiction to the dole.
But we're forgetting something. Welfare is a program for poor people, very poor people. African Americans are three times as likely as whites to fall below the poverty level, and hence to have a chance of qualifying for welfare benefits. If we look at the kind of persons most likely to be eligible, single mothers living in poverty with children under 18 to support, we find a little difference in welfare participation by race. 74.6% of African Americans in such dire straits are on welfare, compared with 64.5% of the poor white single moms.
There's still a difference, but not enough to imply some congenital appetite for a free lunch on the part of the African-derived. In fact, two explanations readily suggest themselves. First, just as blacks are disproportionately likely to be poor, they are disproportionately likely to find themselves among the poorest of the poor, where welfare eligibility arises. Second, the black poor are more likely than their white counterparts to live in cities, and hence to have a chance of making their way to the welfare office.
So why are they so poor? I can see my neighbor asking as visions of feckless idlers dance before his narrowed eyes. Ah, that is a question white folks would do well to ponder. Consider for a start that African Americans are more likely to be disabled, illness being a famous consequence of poverty, or unemployed in the sense of actively seeking work, and far less likely to earn wages that would lift them out of the welfare eligibility range.
As for the high proportion of black families headed by single women, 44%, compared with 13% for whites, Many deep socio-historic reasons could be adduced, but none of them is welfare. A number of respected studies refute the Reagan-era myth that a few hundred a month in welfare payments is a sufficient incentive to chuck one's husband or get pregnant while in high school. If it were, states with relatively high welfare payments, say about $500 a month per family, would have higher rates of out-of-wedlock births than states like Louisiana and Mississippi, which expect a welfare family to get by on $200 a month or less. But this is not the case.
So our confession stands. White folks have been gobbling up the welfare budget while blaming someone else. But it's worse than that. If we look at Social Security, which is another form of welfare, although it is often mistaken for an individual insurance program, then whites are the ones who are crowding the trough. We receive almost twice as much per capita for an aggregate advantage to our race of $10 billion a year, much more than the $3.9 billion advantage African Americans gain from their disproportionate share of welfare. One sad reason: whites live an average of 6 years longer than African Americans, meaning that young black workers help subsidize a huge and growing overclass of white retirees. I do not see our confession bringing much relief. There's a reason for resentment, though it has more to do with class than with race. White people are poor too, and in numbers far exceeding any of our more generously pigmented social groups. And poverty as defined by the government is a vast underestimation of the economic terror that persists at incomes such as $20,000 or even $40,000 and above that we like to think of as middle class.
The problem is not that welfare is too generous to blacks, but that social welfare in general is too stingy to all concerned. Naturally, whites in the swelling near-poor category resent the notion of whole races supposedly frolicking at their expense. Whites, near-poor and middle class, need help too, as do the many African Americans, Hispanics, and others who do not qualify for aid, but need it nonetheless.
So we white folks have a choice. We can keep pretending that welfare is a black program and a scheme for transferring our earnings to the pockets of shiftless, dark-skinned people. Or we can clear our throats, blush prettily, and admit that we are hurting too, for cash assistance when we're down and out, for health insurance, for college aid, and all the rest.
Racial scapegoating has its charms, I will admit. The surge of righteous anger, even the fun, for those inclined, of wearing sheets and burning crosses. But there are better, nobler sources of white pride, it seems to me. Remember, whatever they say about our music or our taste in clothes, only we can truly, deeply blush.